I'd like you to think of a time in your life when you have had a deep feeling of being at home. Maybe it came about when you were becoming aware of the crunching beneath your shoes as you hiked through a maple forest in the autumn. Maybe it was as you tilted your head back in laughter while celebrating a special birthday or anniversary surrounded by friends and family. Think of a time when you had a deep feeling of being at home. For me, one of my deepest moments of feeling at home came years ago when I was meditating. And I was just sitting quiet with my eyes closed in a comfortable chair in my living room. And in my mind's eye, I entered into a small, very small, glowing pink, like a cave. And I had warmth and shelter. And I sat down to rest. And I realized that I was in a womb-like place because of the warmth, because I felt nourished, because I felt safe and protected. Being at home with oneself and one's family, friends, and neighbors is, I believe, one of the greatest blessings that we can experience. I hope that many of you have found that sense of nourishment, safety, and shelter here within the walls of this church building. The sanctuary, where we have our meals together, where we make decisions and share ideas down the halls. This should be a place where there's no need for pretense. No need for anxiety and questioning about being accepted as we are. The word we use for when we gather in this place is we gather in sanctuary. You probably know that centuries ago, it was churches, monasteries, cathedrals that would provide sanctuary for people who were on the lam, trying to escape being hunted down, no matter who they were. When they knocked on the door of that big building house of God, they would be taken in, they would be protected, they would be nourished. And that was quite a thing in those days, to know that there was one place in all their world where they would be safe and where they would be looked after and where they would be protected, no matter who they were or what they'd done. And this still is happening today. I don't know if you're aware. You probably are if you read The Observer, because this happened maybe even 5 years ago now. There was a family who was going to be deported, living in Winnipeg, and they had been worshiping at a United Church, I believe. They had ties, but anyways, they went to the church, and the church gave them sanctuary. They opened their door. They said, "You're safe with us for as long as need be. We'll protect you." And they were in that church and did not leave that church building for something like, well, close to 2 years until things had been settled with the government and they were allowed to stay. So that was a big commitment. It was also a really good, for me, example of what the church is all about. We're a place where we don't ask too many questions, we don't need to, and we welcome. And we hope that by opening ourselves, people who come through the doors will also feel at home and at peace, will feel welcome, and will open their hearts to us, and we can start conversation. And that, for me, ties in with the reading from today in the psalm, because the psalm in another translation says, "God gives rest to God's loved ones." And for me, God's loved ones are everybody. not the ones who are Christian or the ones who follow certain rules, but we are all God's children. God would want to give us rest, I believe. And that implies that there is a central peace within one's being, in relationships with others, and with God. God gives rest to God's loved ones. I find that when we keep our minds and our hearts intentionally open, it's much easier to find that feeling. I want to tell you about something that happened to me this week. On Thursday morning, I sort of made a call, actually, down to conference office and found I was supposed to be there for 9 o'clock. And my gullies, it was 20 to 9 already. So I dashed down to conference office for a meeting. And a miracle happened. An absolute miracle happened at the beginning of that meeting. I wasn't expecting it. It was out of the blue. And it happened between me and another person. I entered, and the first person I saw, of course, face to face, I came with a woman who had recently sent me an email with lots of underlining and lots of capital words, like the whole word, like, no, no, you mustn't. So I knew that I had upset her. I wasn't sure why I had upset her, but I had. And I knew it must be a misunderstanding. It had to be a misunderstanding. That's all there was to it. You know, you've had those situations probably too, where suddenly you're wondering, uh-oh, I know I've done something wrong. And so when I saw her, I had a continuum of choices. I could just give her one of those bewildered, quirky looks of mine, like, what? And then kind of walk around her and go sit down. That felt pretty good. That was my top choice in the moment. But I knew that that wasn't going to solve anything. And I also know that I like to put things off. And the longer I put off explaining, the harder it gets and the more deeply entrenched other people become. So I decided that I shouldn't get defensive with her and start, you know, shouting at her. Because then she would become more defensive, and she was really good at shouting at me. So I walked up to her quite consciously. I looked her right in the eyes. I smiled, and I said, oh, I'm glad I'm meeting you today, because I really need to apologize to you. I don't know what I've done, but I know I didn't mean to upset you, and I'm really sorry that you've been so agitated. And that opened up a conversation that then went into the break, and then we stayed afterwards for almost an hour and talked some more, so that now, I didn't know her very well, but now I feel like I know her. I trust her. I trusted her before just because she was working on the same project as I was. But now I was able to meet her at her level and she at my level. And I bet we're friends even now. And I appreciate her. I appreciate her for her wisdom. I appreciate that she could be vocal and tell me where she stood on something that I was just going to breeze over. And this is the miracle. Well, that whole interaction was a miracle. But when we were sitting there talking after the meeting, that was when I was looking at her, I could see Christ. Just her eyes just looked like Christ. And I could hear what she was saying as being, you know, from Jesus. And I could feel that sense of God around me as I gave her a hug and she me. So for me, that miracle was the connection that came through conversation, the connection that we developed and which is now going to grow, because each of us had come to the other with intentionally open hearts and minds. Over and over again in my life, I have been part of miracles when suddenly what I was fearing becomes a really good exchange, a really good growing experience for two of us or more when this happens. And I find it really good. I recognize this difference when I'm relating with children, whether they be young or teens or adult children, spouses, good friends, neighbors, those we work with, we worship with, we play with. And I know some people might say, well, this is really simplistic. This is really idealistic. But perhaps in this there is a kernel of truth. We pray, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Imagine a world where we'd each face the other with an attitude of respect, of being open, wanting to listen, to share our feelings, our histories, our fears, our hopes. And I wonder if we would need war if we each approach the other that way. Because I believe that's the kingdom that we're working for. We're working towards God's kingdom here on earth as it is in heaven. And I believe it's easier for people of faith, no matter what the faith is, it could be Jews or Hindus or Christian or Muslims or Baha'i or whatever, people who nourish a trusting relationship with the holy, however they define that, seem to extend that sense of trust with the holy to others as well. Seems to be an easier thing to do, an easier process. Today's reading, Psalm 127, advocates that without God at the center of our being, and therefore in our daily personal lives, our community life and pursuits, this feeling of rest, this feeling of home is unattainable. Unless there's a connection with something that's bigger than ourselves. God gives rest to God's loved ones. And what's God's best gift to community? Do you remember that was in the reading today? Do you remember that? A little tiny sentence that kind of went, oh, children. What is God's best gift to community? God's best gift to community, says Psalm 127, is children. Well, we certainly know that here at St. James Rosemount. In this season, we are blessed as the children share their... Share their unbounding energy and enthusiasm and their honesty in questioning a faith and declaring their faith.
And why do they bring that attitude to this community and to this worship time? Because they too feel safe. They feel secure. They feel at home. They too can drop their fear of making mistakes when they're here because they too find God's rest, knowing that they are surrounded by God's love. By God's love shown through their teachers as well, by our love, that's your love and my love, for them, as kids, as individuals. How do we balance sharing the energy and the wisdom of the children while respecting them as equal members within the faith community? I've been trying to balance that my whole life, and I continue to do that here. I realize that many of you like children in worship for as long as possible because you like to see them here. And I understand that. I love to see them here too. And if you don't know this about me, something that I love more than a whole lot of what you see me doing is just interacting with kids and just seeing how they're doing and how their week's been.
And for us in church over the last 50 or 60 years or so, and probably longer than that, my memory doesn't go beyond that at all, we would find it normal for kids to be up at the front and to ask questions and to hear their responses, and that gives us a chuckle, and it helps, I think, our hearts to stay young when we know what's going on inside a little one's brain. I'm trying here to balance in worship the needs of a congregation who are used to seeing children interact with the minister or with someone who's sharing a story, and the desires of the children. You see, many of them don't want to be set apart or to be observed. And we often giggle or smile when a child says something, and sometimes they're totally mystified why that's happening, because they're being very honest and open, and they don't understand our responses coming from our hearts. So I'm trying intentionally to give the kids as much time as possible in their own classes, because that's where they're going to be forming a special kind of bond with their teacher and with the others in the class, a little community as part of this community. Something like the board is a little community, or the Christian Ed Committee is a little community, or UCW, or the people who used to do, and I hope they still do, the men's breakfasts during Lent. Whatever. But I want them to have the chance to really connect within that smaller group, where they can ask any question that pops into their head, where they don't have to be, you know, answering in a slotted way at a slotted time. Because they're interested too. They're interested in faith. And they have so many questions and comments. And they learn best at their own level, just as each one of us learns best at our own level, whatever that is. So I wanted to share, as I'm ending, something that happened at executive meeting this week. Because during that process, one of the teachers just happened to explain to us, as part of the conversation that was going on, she explained that we all, old and young, and I'll call anybody sitting here old, okay? We need to be in relationships that are growing. And we need to be in relationships that are growing with young and old just as much as the kids need to be in relationships that are growing with both young and old. And this teacher shared what many of you are doing, and she could name people off who were doing this even, and what I've seen with my own eyes, even though I don't know you by name yet. She shared that some are really effective with the children. So I'm not going to be as eloquent as she was, but I'm going to summarize. She said something like, growing in knowing each other is easily fostered when we approach each other with respect and open hearts and open minds. When we are truly interested in the child, we'll look them in the eye. If we can, we'll get down to their level perhaps, or maybe up, depending, and tell them we're glad that they're here. And then you do it with another child and another child, and week after week, a process like this develops until the children find a safety with you, and they begin to let you into their world, and they tell you what's going on about their wonders and their questions. And then they might come to you with open arms, running as fast as they can, and you might have to brace yourself. And they might give you the biggest hug you've ever had. And rejoice, these people do, when the child is in this community until they go off to college, to work, to be married. And here you are, still sharing with that person your worlds, both of you, and your wonders and your questions together. The psalmist reminds us that a positive relationship with ourself, within our communities, and reaching out to God's world, this is what makes for a rich life, a life of peace within, a life of continual hope, deepest joy, and rest. May it be so. Amen.